Hey, I'm Adil Bandukwala.
And I'm Kaushik Satish. And this is the Great Indian Marketing Show, where we go behind the scenes with top marketing leaders.
We uncover not just what marketers do, but how.
Our guest today is Unni Radhakrishnan, CEO of Digitas India, a global marketing communications and technology services brand from the Publicis Group. Unni first started his career as a programmer in Bangalore and was part of one of India's first digital agencies, Bridge Over Troubled Waters. He then had an 11-year stint in Maxis, where he built Maxis as the first media agency in the GroupM system to have integrated capabilities in digital media, creative, social, technology and R&D.
Unni loves travel, treks and hikes, reading and pondering about the purpose of existence. Trying to make sense of this world is how he likes to describe his almost constant state of being. Our mutual interest and passion for travel is how I first met with Unni and his better half Bindu a little over a decade back in a contest both of us participated in. Unni and Bindu were finalists in the Great Driving Challenge in 2009, an online reality show and marketing program created by Hindustan Motors, where the top three finalist couples got an opportunity to drive a Mitsubishi CDR Sport to a route of their choice across India. Welcome to the Great Indian Marketing Show, Unni. Fond memories all the way back from 2009.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Adil, and thank you, Kaushik. It's great to be here, and you know, also catching up with you after such a long time is such a great feeling.
But Unni, tell us a little about travel with a couple. I used to religiously follow you and Bindu on all your weekend escapades on TWAC.
Yeah.
Tell us, is it still alive? And I know that you also are part of Rustic Travel now, so would love to hear a little bit about that as well.
Yeah, so Travel with a Couple as a blog, it still exists. The only thing is that our writing has sort of drastically reduced. It is becoming like what used to be three, four pieces in a month has now become one in a year. That's pretty very bad, very, very bad. Plus, I also think realized that a lot of people are not very patient in terms of sitting and reading. And as travelers, I don't think we caught the Instagram wave. We were probably too old for the Instagram wave, you know. So now what we do is that we write maybe sometimes to some of the media pieces on the media, on the news publication. We write something there, then we sort of republish it on the blog.
Got it. Most of us who know you, we know you as this thing called the skeptic marketeer. But even though you call yourself a skeptic, I think you got a prediction that you made way back in 2015 that the world is still kind of grappling with now. And if you remember, that was what you were speaking. I think it was at Melt 2015, where you said creative is about art, copy, code, and data.
Yeah.
You think about that. People would probably have said creative about art and copy. Totally agree, right from many, many years back. But you bought in not just data, which people are talking about now, but you put in code as well. And when the culmination of all this happens, I think the most amazing amount of creativeness is something that the world can fathom and see. So you got this right. So that's the reason why me and Kaushik wanted to double down on you, try and convince you to be one of our first guests. But I'm so delighted that you agreed.
Thank you. Yeah.
So with that, let's get started, Unni. You started off as a developer in the late 90s, just as India's IT industry was taking root.
Yeah.
How and why did you decide to shift to advertising?
Yeah. It's not late 90s, actually. It's early 90s. Probably mid 90s probably would be a better thing. It's a long story. I will try to cut it short. So in my high school and college days, I was very, very fascinated about advertisements. And this is late 80s, okay? And, you know, those days, it means only print. Like, we haven't seen, I mean, we have, in our place, television had not come in. 83, with the World Cup, television came, but we didn't have television, you know, at that time. So it was largely print advertisements. And the trigger was our English tutor in high school who advised us to read advertisement copy as one way of learning. So I ended up reading every ad copy I came across in newspaper and magazines. But I never knew that this is an industry or this is a career option, that there is something called an advertising industry. If someone had advised me at that time, I would have probably started a career as a trainee copywriter in the 90s. The only options were those days were engineer, doctor, lawyer, or bank officer, or a government job. And in the late 80s, when this Raymond's were running this Complete Man series of ads, and it used to be half-page ad on every Sunday on the Hindu newspaper. And I was so fascinated by that ad, and I had the newspaper cuttings of all those ads and preserved it for a long time. And interestingly, the first ever job I applied after graduation was to Raymond's. Some officer trainee or something like that, which came as an ad on the career pages of Hindu at that time in 91 or 92. And that's the kind of impact that those ads I had. You know, to be the first job you apply. And at that time, I was in Kerala, and this job was somewhere in Rajasthan, Bilwara or some place. And I don't even know where Bilwara is, but I went ahead and applied for that job. And much later in 2004, when I came to Mumbai, I actually located the man who wrote that copy, the Complete Man series. Okay, so even as I started as a programmer, I somehow got bored of it and was looking for organizations with some idealism and social relevance. So there is this funny incident when I was in high school. I used to go to this medical shop next to my house, place where we used to stay in a small place. And I see this gentleman in the evening, he lights the lamp and prays to the God. And I start wondering, if this man prays to God to improve his business, that means a lot many people have to fall sick. Right? So that was a dilemma. I think it was that time probably I really started thinking, the purpose and relevance of business and things like that. And that kind of sort of questions always remained in me. So I was looking for some idealism and social relevance, and I really found one group in South, in Chennai, which actually be very highly idealistic, was a case study in many Indian and international universities. It was a proper business, not an NGO or anything, but significantly creating social impact on a lot of construction workers, and things like that. Like, for instance, we had something like 2,000 construction workers who used to get PF and medical care, and they were like a permanent employees. And never in the history of construction industry that construction laborers were paid, looked after that well. So significant social impact. It was a really transformative journey for me, and I was there about 7 years because there was a huge focus on individual development, building organization as a community, building individual, family, community, society, that's the way one development has to happen. So very, very highly idealistic, and at the same time, very moderate salaries and minimalistic lifestyle. So I came across them and had a series of conversations and sort of landed up in that organization. So people who got attracted by the philosophy, so they have a separate track in that organization. So you work very closely with the chairman, and then you sort of identify a particular business domain which you are interested in. And it was figured out that my interest was in marketing and in advertisement. And over a period of time, I sort of became a head of marketing and sales. And the brand had a very huge brand value. We were doing digital as early as 98 or 99. We were advertising in Crick Info when Crick Info was a one-room office in Greens Road in Chennai. Because for us, NRS was a big market at that time. And then sometime in 2004, the agency that was handling our business, which also happened to be India's first digital agency, offered me a role as a business head. And it was sort of right time at the right place with a background in tech and marketing. I landed in a digital agency in 2004 when digital agencies was just sort of starting. Then thankfully, things went on getting better and better personally and professionally. And it sort of continued. And the reason I liked agency life, despite so many frustrations, is really the different kind of people I get to work in an agency. Nothing else, actually, if you ask me. Honestly, it is not even about the great brands I get to work with. It's just about the kind of people around me and, the kind of different skill set I can work with. That's excitement for me in an agency. And that's how it sort of continued. And then in 2018, I took a break, was wanting to get back, trying to get into the social sector. But I was doing a bit of consulting and nothing really came which really sparked my interest in that time. And then this opportunity in Digitas came. So I just grabbed it. So that's the long story short. If I made it shorter.
No, thanks. That gives us a lot of perspective, Unni. Thanks for sharing. And most creative guys that I meet, I tend to call them right brain. But ever since I've known you, I know you're a lethal combination of right meets left. You're as methodical and analytical as creative as you are, although you might not admit it. But thanks for giving me perspective. Exactly. So like I said, but thanks for giving us that perspective. It, you know, also gives perspective to our listeners how you started and how you've been through your career journey. Let's move on and talk a little bit about what you do today at Digitas and what Digitas itself is all about.
Yeah, so Digitas is a global communications and technology services services brand. We call ourselves the connected marketing agency and offering marketing transformation services. So that essentially means right from communications to technology, CRM, customer experience, and media. So our belief is that while a lot of practices have become deeper and specialized kind of thing, you still need agencies and people who are capable to see the larger picture and bring all this together. And there are not too many agencies, so probably I don't know whether there's one single agency in the country today which is sort of offering all the services across this spectrum, right, from a brand positioning strategy to all the technology services. And we have a fairly large technology team. Totally, we're about 500 people. Of that, about 200 are actually part of a global technology delivery team where we help build products for the other Digitas and Publicis markets across. So we work with clients, US, UK, Nordics, you know, most of Asia Pacific. So that technology work happens here. And in India, we work with a lot of premium clients like Jeep, HP, TVS Motors, Amazon, Henkel, Citibank, etc. One other thing which really attracted me to Digitas was this breadth and depth of services. You know, one can sort of see this whole picture. And so we have, unlike many other digital agencies, we do projects with clients. Like client typically come and say that, you know, we have this particular problem. There's not a clear brief. They're saying this is a particular business problem, which is probably connecting with sales and distribution, you know, maybe some loyalty related to the traders and things like that. So they state a business problem and then we work on it. So in that sense, we are bringing technology at the right place for marketing and, customer touch points. So that's what really interests for me. And so I had this whole team of about 500 people. There's a strong management team and strong creative technology. And it's quite a fun working there.
Unni, I want to go back to, the first question where you spoke about how your journey with advertising began, talking about sort of transformative impact that Raymond's ad had on you.
Yeah.
The Complete Man ad, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, go back to the early 90s, you will spot a lot of such ads, which had that kind of impact on people. They carried a message. There was a sense of idealism, purpose. Do you think a lot has changed in the last decade, at least? Is that still the school of thought? Or what are some of the different pressures that we are seeing on the advertising industry?
Yeah, I think the school of thought is probably because I think there are a lot of people who are idealistic and who are highly creative, and all that. But I think because, media landscape has changed and attention spans have changed, nobody writes really large, long copies the way people used to write in print ads, So, the joy of sitting and reading that long copy, which is really in terms of language and prose and all that, is quite an interesting thing. Probably that doesn't happen too much because today one has to cater to Instagram or a Twitter or a TikTok kind of media. And therefore, probably communication becomes a challenge. But I think on the video side, I think because video is really growing, so therefore I think that the storytelling on video probably is not really lost. Yeah, and it is not that storytelling is lost on other platforms. I think we are sort of emerging and probably we find new standards and new ways of telling stories. But so if you ask a young person at 20, 25, there would be enough examples which they might tell about, quite inspired about an Instagram listing. So therefore, I don't want to be judgmental in that. And I don't think that's because we need to know the pulse of the state of the age, if I can use that word, right?
Sure. Has the fundamentals of what makes a great story today changed?
I don't think so. So I think it has to appeal to, a great story sort of appeals to your emotions.
Yeah.
Like if you know the Google ad, the India-Pakistan ad, which is much spoken about, which runs more than 3.5-4 minutes, it's still a fascinating story and people would still sit and watch, right? But I think there are also different schools of thought. I know probably we will come to that, and you wanted to also speak about humanism and, you know, and things like that, right? So there's a different school of thought which basically says that brand building is all about making brand available, and that consumers get to know about awareness and availability of the product is what really drives brand growth.
Got it. Yeah. On one side, you have the storytelling, you know, creating the emotional impact. But on the other hand, you know, there is also, you know, what is the business impact, right? I'm sure there are a lot of businesses that work with you are trying to move from numbers, right? So what I'm also curious to understand is, in the last 20 years, particularly with the advent of digital, has advertising been able to demonstrate a lot more than it used to, you know, in terms of the impact it's able to make for businesses?
I think that's a very difficult question, because there will be probably research bodies which have done a significant research. But the fundamental thing remains same, which is basically that you have a brand proposition and you need to reach that across to customers, reach that message to customers. That is not changed. The way of doing things and the way the message is delivered has probably changed. So therefore, advertising is still playing an important role, and therefore advertising and communication is creating business impact. So, you know, if you ask me a simple question, yes, advertising is creating business impact.
Got it. Thank you.
Unni, when working on a campaign, when do you know you have a story that has real potential to emotionally connect with the audience? How do you make sense of this? Because it's very difficult to do that until a campaign, you know, demonstrates hardcore results. But how do you figure that out early?
Again, I don't think there is a black and white answer, but I think it's the best answer to this is a good creative guy who can give this answer. But let me make an attempt. I think it's a lot of gut instinct for most people, significantly influenced by the conviction shown by the creative person, right? And most often it has to, you know, if it touches a cultural truth or a consumer insight, you know, like, let's say, fear of missing out or acceptance is important. And then, I mean, I'm sure there'll be millions of consumer insights like that. That gives a lot of validation for that idea. And these days, creatives, I mean, I think earlier also it has to happen. Creatives get tested, you know, they show a communication to a group of people and then see how they react. All those kind of testing also happens. And nowadays, probably one part is easier because you can release a fewer, smaller clips of the ad, see how is it getting received on online, because that's become a little more easier online. We have had an instance in my previous stint for an FMCG brand. We sort of had to change, the television commercial went live, and then, you know, we started seeing some conversations online. We had to pull it back and then edit it and then change it. This is probably not very deep or significant, this thing, but it's a funny thing was that this is a milk product, milk powder, and the commercial showed 1-2 teaspoon of milk powder and then 1 jug of milk. So people started asking, how can 1 teaspoon give you 1 jug of milk? That's when then they realized the flaw. They pulled it back and then replaced it with one cup instead of the jug. Right? This was based on some social conversation that was happening. So a lot of interesting things happens like that. There are recently, very recently, like 1 month, 2 months back, we were introduced to a AI-based technology which uses the camera of the phone and measures the kind of impact an ad is having on that person. You know, by way of muscle movement, eye movement, you know, and trying to track emotions and all that. But I think this makes very, very clinical. So I know the whole fun is probably lost in doing this. But they had some case studies in some markets like Israel, where based on this inputs, when the creative got changed, how the messaging was delivered much better and sort of sales improved. So we can't rule out all these kind of things happening.
No, very interesting you bring about this whole AI-based tool that you're talking about that senses people's emotions and, you know, looks at pupil dilation and all of that. Because I had a friend who runs Entropic Tech, guy called Ranjan Kumar, and he's building precisely this kind of tech that you talked about. And I happened to meet him 2 years ago, and I was just blown away saying that, man, this is insane. The kind of prototyping and A/B testing you can do before a campaign goes live to purely understand whether this can be believable or not. It just takes me back to these movies like Mission Impossible that gives you a very different sense of a futuristic world.
Yeah.
Or even a recent series that came on Amazon Prime, I think called Upload, when you go to heaven and you die, then you can live an imaginary life. And it's insane the kind of concepts that we're dealing with today. But what you spoke about just kind of gives us a sense of how much an advertiser or an agency has to go through and what all conversations you have to deal from a client perspective. You've got to be pretty much ready about anything. You know, just about 5 years back, the world was talking about setting up social media command centers to look at social mentions, understand. Yeah. But here you're already talking about how you're using real-time insight to feed that into changing campaigns dramatically overnight. So it gives us some very, very interesting perspective, Unni.
Yeah.
Unni, speaking of that, let's go on to the next question, which is, you know, there's a lot of pressure on brands today to take a stand on a range of social or political issues. One of Digital's campaigns recently, which is the Proper Lady with Puma, did that, which you went and countered conventional ideas of womanhood. You know, how does a conversation like this usually begin? Is it something you advocate to the brand, or do they come to you saying, we'd like to take this stand? How does this all work?
Actually, it happens both ways. Sometimes based on a brief, it sometimes emerges from a working session. Or sometimes the brand brief itself says that, you know, this is the space which they want to be playing. Sometimes also it's based on the, you know, life stage of the brand and what does the brand stand for. And agencies suggest what are the potential spaces it can be. And then, you know, and an idea emerges out of that. In Puma's case, I don't remember because it was last year, much before I joined. I think it was based on a brand brief that we suggested this idea, which is again based on a cultural truth. Like, you know, there is a, you know, women are expected to behave in a certain fashion, and there is a lot of guardrails for, you know, what is the right behavior and all this. So we had to sort of that. So it happens both ways. Sometimes it comes from, a brand says what are the broad area they are in, and then based on a cultural truth, we say that this is something which we should probably look at. You know, like I said, the stage of the brand. I think a few years back, Tata Tea started this Jagore campaign, and they were taking a strong position on that, and they sort of consistently built that over a period of time. So Jagore was about, so it was tea was about waking up, and then, you know, I think probably the agency, we were not the agency, the agency would have gone and said that, well, how do we take waking up to a larger context, waking up to realities, waking up to your responsibilities, waking up to your, you know, so that's probably the discussion that would have happened. And then finally it emerged in an idea like this. But yeah, well, there's a lot of debate whether brands should take these positions or not. I don't know whether there is a black and white answer to this. Personally, if you ask me, I would say, you know, yes, brands need to take a position, because if brands and communication has the power to change the narrative and drive the world in a certain way, then I think definitely probably brands will have to take those positions. Again, here, this whole question, so you're, you know, you're, whether this is all farce or this is all friends which, you know, brands are putting together. So I don't know whether this, I read this 2 days back. You remember that ad which came in, I think, in your New York Stock Exchange, whether the girls bronze statue was put in front of the, yeah, of the bull. It was highlighted as one of the most powerful way of a brand wanting to say women empowerment and things like that. I forgot the name of the company. It was some consulting state, something called state, something is called consulting. And a few months later, so when they did this, they were claiming that an equal world for men and women and all that. A few months later, it was figured out that that very same company has a differential pay scale for men and women. Right. So you don't walk the talk. Yeah. So I think so. That's a problem. That's why I think sometimes it's all friends put up by brand. And again, the counter argument, you know, in fact, apparently in 1960s, Milton Friedman is supposedly have said, Milton Friedman is the high priest of the free market capitalism. And he's supposed to have said, the business of business is business. Nothing beyond that. Right. So if you go by that school of thought, then it's a different ballgame.
Got it. Unni, the other thing I wanted to talk to you about is also the innovation on the form side that we are seeing, right? You know, brands today are innovating quite heavily when it comes to form. I think the biggest story that came out this month was when Tinder launched Swipe Night, right? You know, they almost set a new benchmark for how interactive content can be done.
Yeah.
Are you seeing similar forays by other brands to engage their audience?
Yes, actually, this is not new, if you ask me. There's a constant endeavor by brands, and every brand and every agency really leverage what are the new formats or new emerging things in technology. and use that for a brand engagement story. So this is a sort of constant this thing. So I remember some 8 or 10 years back, when we launched Titan had a light powered watch. And this was very early days, like 2000, I don't remember the year, 9, 10 or quite early. So we actually did a mobile app which actually powers based on light. And then you can actually create a virtual watch on your wrist based on that. So every time when something new technology happens, most creative minds are trying to figure out what is the best way of capitalizing that. In fact, one of the publicity agency a few years back did a work for HP lubricants, if you remember this campaign called Roads That Honk. And so basically on a U-turn, they put sensors. And when two trucks coming from both sides, these pillars start honking. And it sort of solved a problem of accidents on hill highways. And a lot of other countries, in India itself, NHA decided to sort of... So this happens as a one installation or two installation, and then you make a nice video out of that, and that becomes a story. But when this was tested out, they found it very useful. Different highways and state highway authorities started wanting to implement that. Few other countries outside India also wanted to implement that. So this is not something new. This has been a constant, at every stage, what is the relevant technology which can be used? And it doesn't start with technology. It is like some idea by a smart creative guy who really thinks on this, and then it comes from that.
Got it. And today, for customers who come to you and who work with you, what is the ideal working relationship like? What makes a great relationship between an agency and a corporate?
Yeah, this is a very tricky question because we are on public forum. So, but see, great relationships are built at multiple levels. One level is the capacity level that, as an agency, you have all the capabilities and capacities to really solve the client's problems. Other level is that we are able to build personal connections with the people. You're sort of able to really empathize what a client's problem is and vice versa, what clients are able to empathize what an agency is. So the best relationship are where clients see agencies as partners and not as vendors. There are many clients I've seen personally where this spirit is driven right from the top of the client side. At a CEO level, that this spirit is driven, that agencies are not just your vendors or who can sort of execute, just execution, but treat them as partners because they are sort of working with you on business solutions. Then agencies also become very flexible, go that extra mile. Clients also very accommodative and, doesn't become very inhuman. Otherwise, the biggest problem is that agencies, we all feel most clients are inhuman. A lot of clients do that. Yeah. So most of these cases, it doesn't happen. This kind of ideal relationship doesn't happen for various reasons, right? The agencies need good, smart people to work on real business problems who can sort of work at par with the client's abilities and appreciation of the client's problems. But when we get, when agencies get really shortchanged on commercials, the ability to hire good people diminishes. And then it's sort of a vicious cycle. And then, yes, some clients really do understand this, and they don't really try to squeeze you when it comes to commercials. But a real problem which you're seeing in the last few years is a purchase department who is sort of taking all calls on commercials. And they have absolutely no appreciation on what goes on here, right? To give a live example, an agency is expected to think proactively on brand problem and go with ideas. And here is a case, an agency goes with a great strategic project idea. The marketing team falls in love with it and finds it extremely relevant for the brand at this stage, and it can improve the growth. Then it moves to the purchase department. Purchase takes this whole program, project construct and all that, and calls for an RFP and three other agencies get into the picture. And the one who gets the lowest cost goes with this. And this cheapest one has not done any of this groundwork or any of this research or any of this understanding, program, construct, nothing. Right now, where is the motivation for an agency to keep thinking and, going, working with brands, right? So there is no value for the time. There's no value for time and thinking. Not giving value for time and thinking is a very Indian problem, is what we have seen. Because in other markets, I've heard stories that any of this thing, which is what you're not supposed to be doing as a regularly accepted scope of work, any other thinking or new projects and those kind of things are all, or even giving a session to the client on the current state of the market. if the client calls for a session of, let's say, give me a one-hour session on what's the trends, what's the man, those things get typically paid. That doesn't happen in India. This is a problem, and I don't think anyone has a solution to this, probably, because, you know, as India grow in terms of economically and things like that, but I think we have enough people, probably. So I don't see this problem going to get solved. Yeah, but that's a wish list.
No, I think completely agree. You know, very similar to what happens in the enterprise sales world, because procurement is kind of getting out there and they have a job because they report on the CEO, and for them, every penny matters and they are just trying to save as much as they can. But on the other hand, marketing really wants to do something that is innovative, something that's powerful, something that's breakthrough. But then you can't get the best guys for the cheapest buck. It just doesn't work that way. And it's so difficult to solve this problem because on one hand, you have the CFO. On one hand, you have the CMO. And who's going to win the battle? Because both of them are reporting to the CEO. It's a very, very difficult battle. And like you said, I think this is an idea whose time has come where somebody needs to get up and solve this problem. I don't know how you're going to do this, but if anybody who has a recipe for this is potentially sitting on a gold mine. So let's move on to the final question of this podcast, Unni. You know, the impact of COVID-19 has been strikingly uneven across sectors. While some have benefited, a lot have struggled. Do you believe there are lessons here for marketing leaders, particularly as they begin to steer their brands into a post-COVID world?
Again, very difficult to give a black and white sort of answer. See, yes, some sectors are badly affected. Then some sectors quickly found some new opportunities, ideas to roll out products. But if you ask me whether there is a broad-based, generalized lesson for marketers, I don't know. I can make some cliched statements like deliver value, do what is right, etc. But then I think all that is just cliched, right? Or be resilient, be innovative, etc. I personally feel all that is empty rhetoric. Yes, speed, agility, creating new product lines or readjusting production lines. In fact, some of the successful people have managed to pull all this together. So all that is important, but I would consider that as a larger organizational moves rather than a success of marketing in that, right?
Awesome. I think that's very practically said, Unni. But, you know, if I had posed this to someone else, I'm sure they would have said what you potentially didn't say, which is speed, be agile. You've got to be nimble. You've got to be adaptive and responsive to change. You've got to react in real time. This is the time to be prescriptive, not predictive.
I heard empathy was something we heard a lot, right?
Yeah. I don't know if you saw that. There was one video which got released, which is a combination of some many ads across the country, across the world, what brands said on this period. And uncannily, same words. Every brand is saying, these unprecedented times, we are with you. The words are also same across categories, across brands. And you know, one can easily see through that. So yeah, it doesn't really make sense.
Fantastically said, Unni. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That was Unni Radhakrishnan. Unni is the CEO at Digitus India, like most of us know. It was a pleasure having you, Unni, on the Great Indian Marketing Show. Thank you so much for your time. Kaushik and I are indebted to you for making time for us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I generally had fun having a freewheeling conversation.
Hey, that was Unni Radhakrishnan, CEO of Digitas India.
Thank you for joining us. And if you've liked what you've heard, don't forget to subscribe to us. We're available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all major podcast networks. Until our next episode, this is me, Adil Bandukwala.
And Kaushik Satish, signing off for the Great Indian Marketing Show.